Welcome to the Online Success Journey Podcast, your opportunity to discover and learn from entrepreneurs like yourself. This is not your typical podcast, but a place where you can get the real story and find out how real people encounter speed bumps and detours, but journey through to find success. Now, here's your host for the Online Success Journey Podcast, Patience.
Hello everyone and welcome to Online Success Journey. This is episode 186. Are you ready to join the clan?
Today we have Greg Dixon, the CEO of Amatem, a software company he founded in 2017 with one specific goal: to transform the customer engagement experience. Amatem is disrupting the traditional notion of how software vendors where buyers experience product demos, with its initial offering Demo on Demand, known for leading by his business doctrine of customers first, employees second, and they will come. Hello, Greg.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. I know the clan is anxious to hear your story, so let's get started with the basics. Can you tell my clan a little bit about your background, about what you did before you started your own online business?
Yes, certainly. Well, thanks for having me today. Again, my name is Greg Dickinson, and I go back when I got out of the Air Force in the early 90s, I got interested in technology based on my technical background, and I was fortunate enough to work for a company that was a startup, a spinoff out of a corporation, and focused on e-commerce. And that led me to one of the most successful e-commerce companies called Ariba, and I worked for Ariba for about 8 years, and then moved on and did a couple other startups, and I started another business in 2007 that thankfully, based on some great customers, we had an exit in 2014. And I decided that I wanted to go do it again and start another business. And the one area that I saw in my whole 30-year career that has not really been focused on and automated is that, you know, the product experience, the demo, and specifically it really could branch out into many different industries, but specifically in the software industry, you know, in order to buy from a software company, 99% of all buyers say that they want to see and feel and touch the product. And yet the demo process is exactly as it was when I became a pre-sales engineer at Ariba in 1997. So I kind of looked at that market and said, isn't there a way that we can make the buying experience better so that people can experience the software products they want? And at the same time, can't we make that process better for the sellers in the software industry? So that's kind of where we are today. I founded Amatem. I'm not that bright of a guy, so I had to make a simple name. So Amatem is actually my demo spelled backwards, because that's my love of the pre-sales and being able to demo the software. So I wanted to create a technology that would help the buyer and the seller.
Wow. What a background. Okay, so you've been in the business for a long time, but Greg, why do you do what you do?
I love creating something out of nothing. And I've had the fortune of working for some great leaders and some great mentors that have kind of helped me to think about, you know, you have an idea and the idea is only as good as the execution around it. So I really think that that my passion is my hobby, in the sense that I love starting businesses with a whiteboard or a PowerPoint idea and being able to assemble a team of great people to help you take that idea and make it into something. And that's what we did at Ariba. I joined a team there. I was an early employee of Ariba, and that was e-commerce before anyone knew what e-commerce was. Hyperos, my business I just exited about 3 years ago, was how do you talk about risk management? And there we built a team. We had an idea, a concept, and we built a team. And I think if you look at the one thing I really enjoy doing, it's that. It's how do you take an idea? And I've always been fascinated by the manufacturing process, where everything starts on the left and comes in one door and out comes a car or a product in the other. And I think software is very much like that. So that's really why I'm doing this again, is I think that the industry as a whole really is begging, is thirsty for a better buying experience. And for sellers, how do we get the product in more people's hands? So creating that, because it's not done that way today, into something is what I really love to do. And I want to formulate a great team and lead them, you know, in kind of disrupting this space and creating something new that will be valuable to our customers and their customers, which is pretty unique and special.
Let's put man aside, because we've been in business for a long time. How do you know you are successful with your new adventure?
Well, I think it all boils down to the customer. And as I say, and as you introduced me, I read a book about 20 years ago, Hug Your Customer. And they talked about put your customers first, your employees second, the revenue will take care of itself. And, you know, that doesn't bode well for everyone to hear me say that. But I used to say that to my board all the time at my previous company. And I think the measure of success is your customers. Are they happy? Are they getting value? Are they getting what they expect? Are they renewing? And then, you know, have you created an environment in which that team of people, because, you know, he or she who has the best team wins. And if you can assemble a team that is really focused on driving that value to that customer, and they get excitement and they get thrills and they get joy out of watching the customers conquer something or succeed, then you really have built a cohesive team of people that are working together and are striving for the same thing. So I think that's really where there's lots of metrics that could be measured in revenue and other things. But I believe wholeheartedly that you measure, you know, your success. I had a great mentor at Ariba called Keith Kroc, and he used to say, we measure our success by our customer's success. And that really stuck with me, and I try to put that into my organization every day.
Can anyone be an entrepreneur, or are some people more cut out for it than others?
Well, someday, yes. I think the answer is 100%, right? Because when you, as much as I like starting that journey, when you're going to create a product, something out of nothing, you have to be willing to be confident, but not cocky. You have to be able to be willing to get the door slammed in your face a lot. And for a lot of people to tell you, I don't know if I like that idea. It's not that great of an idea. And, you know, that takes a special person to say, I believe in what I'm doing. Let me, you know, get a bunch of other people to believe in what I'm doing. And so, you know, it's scary fun, if you will. And you have to be cut out to, you know, go down that path and be willing to take those risks and be willing to understand that it doesn't happen in a day. It doesn't happen in an hour. It takes a long time to really build something that your customers will appreciate. And so I don't think it's for everybody, but I think, you know, the good news is that you can actually join a team of people. And if you don't have all those risk taker skills or that, you know, willingness to be to go down that path, but you can join a team that does. And together, you all can find each other's weaknesses and help, right? So that as a team, you're able to do things that as an individual, you may not have been able to do. I know I can't do what I'm doing now by myself. I need my team around me. And I think our software, right, propagates out to our customers by saying that what we're helping you do is as a team work better, as a team to move forward. So I think that's the key, right? Is if you're not going to do it by yourself, can you be a part of an organization that has the skills in multiple people's heads? And as a team, you are successful.
How have software buyers changed since you started in the software business?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it dates back a while, but if you think back, let's just go to the IBM mainframe days, the salesperson, the company IBM, had all the information. And if you wanted to learn anything about IBM, you had to contact the salesperson, and they would, you know, indoctrinate you with what they used to call product sheets and information, and every single solitary nugget of knowledge had to be gained from that conduit, that sales team that was dealing with you. And as that has, you know, moved through in the 90s and the 2000s, well, the internet has allowed users, people, buyers, prospects to get a lot of information from a lot of places. And the app effect of our phones and the availability of information from multiple places has kind of changed the buyer to be more self-driven. They say the buyer now is in control, or they say the buyer wants to follow their own journey up to maybe 80% of the buying cycle and then contact sales. And that's a lot different. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's a lot more technology in our consumer worlds. And therefore, before you go on a vacation, before you buy a car, before you buy a TV, before you go to a college, right, you do all that information and that investigation on your own, and you piece together multiple sources of information, whether they be blogs or whether they be great podcasts like yours or white papers. People are thirsty for information, and then they get to a certain point where they say, okay, now I now want to engage with that company and buy. And I think that's a dramatic difference. And what it's requiring is a lot different approach from the sellers, because now you don't want to necessarily sell to that buyer. You want to educate that buyer. You want to help them to understand what you do, when and how they want to. So it's a much different buyer because of that technological change. The web, the cloud, the podcasts and things of that nature have given us as buyers the ability to gain information on our own, and we want to, and then when the time is right, we'll engage. And that's completely different than it was 10, 20 years ago.
How is this affecting the software vendors?
Well, so it's affecting software vendors a lot, because their processes, if you follow what took place 10 or 15 years ago, your organization was set up to work with a buyer and kind of guide that buyer through, quote unquote, your sales process. Think about one easy example. A lot of companies today, in order to market to you, want your email address. So they've set up a lot of processes in order for you to get information from them, a white paper, or participate, in a product demo. You have to go to their website, click on a button, fill out a form, and they keep all that, kind of hostage, right? And in order for you to get a demo, you have to click on the request a demo button. So what it amounts to is that the software companies are still acting as if they're that IBM sales rep that, hey, if you want information, you'll come to me. And that has caused conflict. The buyer wants to behave and gain information and buy from you one way, and you're trying to sell to them in a different way. And that's not in alignment. It's really evident if you look at three strong examples. Uber is really not that different than a taxi cab experience. What Uber did was make the buying experience much easier. They removed the friction. Pull out your phone, push a button, and the ride will come to you. Amazon, buying of books is really not that different than Barnes & Noble. Well, they made it easier to buy a book. So it's not necessarily what was happening. It's the buying experience. And the last example is Netflix and Blockbuster. The video movies are exactly the same. They're identical. Both companies offered them, but Netflix was able to figure out a way to make that buying experience much less frictionless. And so what we're seeing is the organizations, the software companies that have figured out a way to make that buying experience simple and pleasant for the buyer are the ones that are actually taking the lead now. And there's lots of examples of what is being termed product-led, or companies that are leading with the product to get the buyers interested and accommodate that changed buyer, and removing the friction of those forms, friction of the fact that the buyer wants information now. They don't want to schedule a meeting for a week from now. It's just a completely different buyer, and the sales organizations need to adjust. It's not a bad thing. It's just to adjust to the buyer. And if you can look at those examples I gave you, Uber, Netflix, and Amazon, three companies that have figured it out and have completely taken over their particular area because they have removed that friction and made the buying experience much easier.
What have you learned from business as a whole?
From business, I've learned that it is really important to understand the customer and what they really truly value in your software. I've learned that you get what you inspect, not what you expect. So I think understanding that customer and then turning that into a series of metrics and understanding, are we doing the right things, not in our gut and think we're doing the right things, but are we doing the right things by a series of metrics to measure, right, our success. And I think I talked a little bit about this earlier, but I think also it's about, that team and allowing that team to help you guide and drive the business. I get teased a lot for this saying, but I always say, you know, I'm just the person in the boat shouting stroke. I'm allowing the team to do what they do. And my job is to get all the obstacles out of their way. And I think in business, your job as the leader is to open up the field and allow those great team members that you have to excel and to grow and to prosper and to drive towards that customer. And your job as a CEO is to remove those barriers and provide, right, that direction that we want to go in, and then allow them to prosper and move in that direction and not micromanage everything and be involved in every decision. You just can't, you know, grow that way. And I've had the fortune of working for great leaders that have taught me that, and watch companies go from zero to, you know, billion-dollar market caps, and zero to pleasant exit strategies and strategic sales. And I've seen it because of the business allowing the team, right, to be successful.
What is one thing that has contributed to your success?
Take that back probably to my upbringing. In my house, we were very fortunate. We had I had a great family. I had a great upbringing. But in our house, you got what you worked for. And if you wanted a new baseball mitt, you had to go out and either an allowance or do odd jobs. And that, you know, kind of instilled in me this notion that, you know, as I say to my team all the time, things come to those that wait, but only what's left from those of us that hustle. And that was Benjamin Franklin said that quote. And I think that's what I've kind of always tried to do. Is I may not be the smartest person, but I certainly will outwork you, and I'll out hustle you, and I'll out try to get to the goal. And I think that's what, you know, how I grew up. I had a paper route in the early stage. I worked on a farm. I worked on picking up apples. And so I always was looking for how do I, you know, move myself towards the goal, and it always involved work. It always involved, if I want something, I'll go out and get it. But that's effort and that's hard work. And I think that's, you know, kind of what my family, my dad, my mom instilled in me. And, you know, again, I've been fortunate to work for a lot of great companies that have helped me to broaden that perspective and clearly understand the essence of team and company.
So you believe in hustling?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it, you know, it's easy to feel sorry for yourself if you're starting up a business. Not every day is going to go the way you want it to. Not every customer that you in your mind think they should be a customer. Not everyone is. So, you know, continuing to push forward and really, you know, work and understand what it is you want to gain and focus your team and yourself, you know, on that goal. And those goals could be not just business. It could be about the team itself. And what are the individual aspirations of your employees, your diverse work group? How do you make that important? And how do you make sure that if your goal is to have, you know, certain aspects within your business for your team, they have goals that they want to accomplish? How do you do that? At my last company, the company wanted to really give back to the community. So we figured out ways to go to the soup kitchens and go to the churches and go, you know, during the holidays, we would all go to Walmart together as a team and buy a bunch of goods and then donate that to different shelters. So I think, you know, we wanted to do it. We figured out a way to do it, and then we executed on it. And that was, we could have sat around and said, boy, wouldn't it be great if, and that's not what we did. You know, someone on the team said, hey, I think this year we should try to reward and get entrenched inside the community. And we went and did that. And it was so, so beneficial. But again, that's just another example of as an organization, if you figure out what you want to go do, it may not come to you, right? You have to go out and figure out a way to do it. And there's going to be obstacles in your way. How do you either go over them, around them, or through them, right?
Okay. What is the most valuable thing you have ever given away?
Probably the most valuable thing I've ever given away is not monetarily, but it's time, right? And I think that, you know, one of the things I just talked about at my previous company, Hyperos, is that, you know, it was, I'll say, easier to give money, but it was really hard to find time to give your time away. And I think you know, you're busy, you have your business, you have your family, you have your kids' events, you have everything going on, and you have your immediate family. And, you know, being able to find time to mentor, I donate my time now at Clemson University to be a guest speaker and work with the young, you know, business people around entrepreneurship. So I think, you know, that's, I hope it's valuable to them. It certainly is a commitment on my part to make sure that I'm still, you know, providing as much give back and pay it forward as I possibly can. And so maybe that, I don't want to sound egotistical that I think that's valuable, but I do think that some of my experiences have benefited some young entrepreneurs. And I think, you know, the group that we had at Hyperos giving their time and effort to make sure that, you know, people at a homeless shelter had, you know, food or clothes on their back is very valuable.
Let's talk about your company. Tell us more about Amadem.
Yeah, so what we're all about is, again, helping that buyer experience. And we have a software technology. If you think of the process today, if someone wants to buy software, typically in 95% of all software companies, there's a button on the website that says schedule a demo, request a demo, see a demo. And what that means is if you click on that button, a form pops up and you have to fill out that form, first name, last name, email address, title, et cetera. And then they will schedule a meeting in the future in which to have a conversation with what's important to you and why you're looking at our software. And then another week or two later, you get a demo. So first of all, that's 85% of all users that are presented with that form to have a demo reject it. They abandon it. They will not fill it out. They just leave the website. So what that says is that a lot of businesses that are spending lots of money, tens of thousands of dollars to drive traffic to their website in order for people to gain information about them and eventually buy their software are leaving. Their doors are closed. They're not allowing that buyer to come in through it because they only have that one door. So what we have said is, why can't we utilize a new technology, which is a searchable video? So think of Alexa that meets YouTube, in which someone records a lot of content about their company, their sales pitch, and their software demo. And it, no one's going to sit through 60 or 90 minutes of that. But if they could ask a question, does your software have parallel workflow? Does your software allow the supplier to log in? Does your software allow custom risk scoring? And the user gets to the exact moment of the video in which that is being demonstrated. You've now created a way for that buyer to self-serve, to learn about your product, to engage with your company based on your best product demonstration. So there's a whole host of things that are wrong with the current go-to-market strategy of doing a demo. And our software is there to do help that buyer's journey, make that buyer engage with you more. At the same time, if you're a software company, how do you engage with that buyer? How do you expose your product in a way the buyer wants to have it exposed? And can you gain intelligence and knowledge from that buyer's experience? And with our software, the answer is yes, because when that prospect asks a question, we are storing that question. So now you know what's important to that buyer. They call that a buying signal. So Amadem is one focus only. As I said, I started Ariba in 1997 as a pre-sales engineer. I have been the demo person at Ariba, at two other startups that I did. And when you're a young company, the CEO oftentimes is doing the demo when you're the founder. And so I have a passion for the demo. And I think it's high time that we figure out ways to automate the top of the funnel early demos so that your talented pre-sales engineers can focus on the bottom of the funnel demos that are much more complex, much more scripted, much more customer focused versus the top of the funnel, which is more about, you know, can your software do something, not necessarily how it does it. So we've created a set of technologies that help drive, right, that buyer experience and help that company sell more software, generate more leads, have more content if you're in marketing. Very simple, and it is, right? It's the one area of the sales process that has not been automated. And, you know, sales marketing has been automated, and sales tools and forecasting and pipeline management, SEO and advertising has seen oodles and oodles and oodles of investments in automation. But the demo for 97% of all companies is exactly as it was when the internet was rolled out back in 1996, 1997. It's request a demo, fill out a form, and then a one-to-one demo. And by the way, that demo process doesn't work for the seller. It's expensive. It's time-consuming. They demoed a lot of people that aren't necessarily going to buy the product right away. The pre-sales engineers are aggravated by that process and don't like it because it's not challenging to them. It's not utilizing their time, so they're frustrated. So there's problems on both sides, the buyer and the seller, and what we're providing is that glue, that technology that can make that process seamless and work for both organizations. It's exciting. It really is.
Well, I'm excited about the product. Is it going to replace some forms on the websites like that as well, or forms for other companies? Well, are you taking over that?
Well, I don't think it's a taking over as much as it is that if you look at a lot of the way buyers, if you think about, you know, you as a person, if you're going on a vacation, right, you want to go online, look at the pictures. You want to experience, understand what the room looks like. What do the grounds look like? What do the menus look like? What do the events look like? That's you trying to understand what that hotel or that resort has to offer. Same thing with a car, right? You do all kinds of research to understand, and then you go test drive. And so I think what we're saying here is that the software product is part of that investigation. And so instead of you having to fill out a form when you don't know if that software will meet your top 5 or 10 needs, why can't we automate that process so that, by the way, your buyers can experience your product 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? They don't want to fill out a form and then wait. They're all about now. And so I think, yes, the amount of forms that are coming off of websites is older school kind of content marketing and believing that you have to have, you know, the company with the most email addresses, the most quote unquote, you know, leads wins. And I think what we're starting to see is that the buyers are saying, no, what you want to do is find a buyer that is most likely to buy your product, and the product experience can educate that buyer like no other content you have, and can create what we call demo qualified leads, so that now you really are know that when you start to engage with that buyer, you're starting to engage with a buyer that knows a lot, their experience. They have gone down a journey by themselves. Therefore, they're indicating that their interest level is much higher than that person that, you know, came to your website, saw the form and just left, right? If that's not working, if 85% of all buyers are rejecting that form, not filling it out, think about that in larger terms, 85%. So if you have, you know, 10,000 people that click on it a month, that's 8,500. That's a lot of quote unquote potential visitors that you could engage with if they wanted to see your product and you said no, you said do this first. So we see the forms, you know, as people look at our technology and other things similar to ours and begin to try to automate that buying experience more and more, we see the forms be diminishing and the use of the forms, you know, diminishing. They're still going to have a purpose in certain areas, but in the top of the funnel in that engagement, we start to see companies that are not using forms like a Slack or a Zoom or Expensify that are leading with the product and saying, hey, we're not going to market to you. Just jump into our product, start using it in a trial format. And if you like it, you know, we'll engage together. Those companies are growing like weeds and doing phenomenally well because they're using that product as a tool to grow and not keeping it behind the curtains. You know, it's a funny story I tell when I'm giving speeches, and I said, think about it this way. If you walk into an Apple store and instead of all those beautiful watches, iPhones and iPads out on the counter for you to pick up and look at and go and, you know, wow over, they were all locked up in a cabinet. In order to see one of them, you had to fill out a form and come back the next day. None of us would buy an Apple phone. We'd leave the store and say, this process is terrible. And you would reject that process. And that's what's happening on the websites. And just the forms are causing that abandonment, that rejection. And, you know, companies are starting to realize that and starting, thankfully for us, they're starting to work on ways to help them automate that process and make the buyer and the supplier work better together.
Now you have created a really enticing software. It's really amazing. I'm excited. Who is this product for? Is it for people who are in 5, 6, 7, 8 figure? Who's your clientele?
Yeah, so we have customers that are in the less than 20 employees, and we have customers that are up in 500 employees. And we're talking to some customers that have thousands of employees. The common denominator here is if you're in business, and right now we're focusing on software. If you're in a software business and you need to show your product, regardless of size, if you need to show your product to your buyers in a demo environment, or you have a lot of webinars you want to utilize and let people find, you have information and it's a video format that you want to allow your prospects to search and find the information they want quickly, you're a prospect of ours because you are utilizing that video content in a way that your buyers want to consume it. And it's important to think about the fact that buyers today, the average watch time on YouTube is less than 3 minutes. So if you create a 60-minute video, no one's going to watch it. And think about that video user experience. You have play, pause, fast forward, and rewind. That's the way you find information. With our technology, 60-minute video, patients ask the question, does your software provide for podcast automation? Boom, it would find the 10-minute and 30-second mark in which the person is talking how they can help patients, right? So it's much different technology to bring forward. So, you know, the simple answer is all companies, right, have to go out and demo their product. They're all trying to do it different ways. And what we're doing is providing them with a modern, you know, kind of video is the number one way that people learn and consume information. And search is what we've all become accustomed to. If you want to know something, you go to Google and type in a question. It comes back with an answer, but you have to read it. You have to follow that link. With our technology, ask a question, and it brings you to that video playback in which that information is being explained to you in a demo format. You got 10 questions, ask them. It'll find the right video and then bring you to the right section in that video where you can consume that information. So you asked me a simple question, but it's a long answer because every company is trying to do something different, but they all of them have to get the product in the hands of the buyers because 97% of all of their customers have to see the product before they buy it. So it's a given. It has to be done no matter how big you are. We want to help every company do it better.
Okay. Where do we find this product and how can we connect with you?
Well, so you can connect with us at Omedym, OMEDYM.com. And as you would expect, our software is right there for you to demo. So ask your question of what you want to learn about Omedym. If you want to get me with my email address, it's you can do info@Omedym or send me an email direct, GDICKINSON@Omedym. Of course, you can always go to LinkedIn and connect with me there, Greg Dickinson. So, any of those mechanisms work, we'd love to talk to you.
So, Clan, there will be more from Greg in a moment. If you are listening on one of the many podcasting platforms rather than my website and you are encouraged by Greg's journey, go to onlinesuccessjourney.com for a bonus portion of the interview. The Online Success Journey is a wonderful membership community built for people searching for the path to success. We are one big clan and you can be part of this community for free. Once you have joined the clan, click on part of Greg's journey or over 150 other journeys that are available and learn how you can find the right path for your own online success journey. That's a wrap, clan. Remember, success is a journey. Patience and Greg.
This is not the end of the journey. We hope you've enjoyed listening to part one and want to be sure you know there is a second part to this and every journey podcast at OnlineSuccessJourney.com, filled with even more success tips, uplifting stories, and even a bit of fun. There are dozens of episodes only available to the members of the Online Success Journey clan. Check out the website and click on Join the Clan for more information. Patience would like to thank you for listening to this podcast, and she has a free audio gift for you at her website. Go to OnlineSuccessJourney.com for instant access to this gift. Of course, you know that listening to the journeys of others helps each of us chart our own path. So make sure you're subscribed to be notified as each new interview is posted. There are so many ways to stay connected to the Online Success Journey and to listen in. And if you're enjoying the podcast, we appreciate your help in telling others. One of the best ways to share the benefit you get is to rate and review it at Stitcher and other sites by clicking the stars or completing the ratings form, by clicking thumbs up and leaving a comment on YouTube, or liking and sharing the podcast on social media. To review the podcast within iTunes, simply open iTunes to the podcast, click on Ratings and Reviews, then write a review. On behalf of Patience and until next time, thanks once more for listening. It is our hope that this podcast will guide you on your own online success journey.